Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. Welcome, welcome. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the unceded, stolen territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/CJSF Radio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF, which is 2573. Welcome, everybody. This is Slumber Party. I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star. Thank you so much for joining us on this blistering hot day. Kind of beautiful, though.
It's been nice. It's been pretty nice. I took the bus up and I was like, this has been a great day already at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a little too early for it to be a great day. But we're just going to get into the music. We have a bit of a topic later that was tied to 2 weeks ago. But yeah, it's about performance. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we had to do a replay last week because I was at the dentist getting some cavities done. Yeah. So obviously, I wasn't going to be able to talk too well. We could have tried. It might have been fine. But, you know, might as well just hold off for 1 week.
Yeah, and this is a reminder to floss, everyone.
Please
daily
floss.
Reminder.
Oh my gosh, please floss. This public service announcement, like, I have so many cavities because I haven't flossed for a long time, and I don't want to see a needle ever near my mouth again.
I wonder how many cavities we have combined. Like hundreds, maybe.
How many do you have?
I've had a lot. Yeah.
Okay, we'll discuss this later.
We'll do the math. We'll get back to you.
Okay, but this first one you'll be hearing, I was listening to this old game, like Game Boy / Nintendo music when I was studying, and there was this one song that this person did a 25-year dub on. So this is Wax Thief's 25-year dub on the Buck Bumble theme song. So
specific today.
Yeah, super specific. This was actually a 1998 Nintendo 64 game. So you play as a bumblebee character, and it's kind of like a shooter game that you take down evil.
Ooh, it's like a nod to Vancouver as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about Connor. I was like, I feel like maybe he would definitely know about this. So hope you enjoy.
Time to rock with the big in the back, bumble. What about now? It's time to rock with the big in the back, bumble. What about now? It's time to rock with the big in the back, bumble.
To the base of the base.
Video series captures high quality video recordings of live performances.
So, who are you?
We're necking. We're necking. We're a band.
And interviews with impactful and inspiring artists.
We weren't very good at keeping it a secret.
As well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities. Watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.
Atención.
Yucasterio. Domingos 6 a 8 p.m. 90.1 CJSF Radio.
CJSF
90.1 FM.
Radio Mano Papachango
90.1 FM. Yucasterio.
Atención.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You are tuning in to Slumber Party. Sorry.
Slumber Party.
We're just going to replay that song all again. And I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star. The last song was Firefly, the Kingdom edit by Shy Girl. We love Shy Girl here.
Yeah, I think it's a played a lot of Shy Girl. The last one after that was Extempore by Minor Sign Project.
They're an electronic duo from Calgary and Montreal, just so y'all know.
Very Canadian.
They're cool.
Very Canadian. Very cool. And then the one before that was I'm Sorry Women by Bit was here. Also very, very good electronic setup we had today.
Yeah, some good tunes. And then we're going to get into our topic that, as we mentioned before, is a continuation of a topic that we had 2 weeks ago about performativity and performative males. And it was actually supposed to be in that topic, but sometimes we do a bad job with putting too much content to talk about, and then we run out of time. So that's what happened last, or like 2 weeks ago. And there, we were talking about how a lot of different roles that we have are performance, and how performative males, like why they're called performative males. And I guess I had an argument about why everything is a performance, and it was going off of Judith Butler's concept of gender performativity, which is basically the idea that gender should be thought of as a noun, something that you do to consistently uphold this idea of gender, rather than a verb, like being a certain gender. And that's an argument that there's no innate quality of gender. It's learned and then performed. So it's very much so like a socialization stance on gender, which I personally relate with and think that it makes a lot of sense, because, you know, you don't just pop out of the womb and know all of the different things you should be doing as a woman or a man or like any person with any gender. So yeah,
is the argument. I read up on this too. I have a slight more biological stance on this, but I do agree that it's not like we pop out the womb and then instantly we do all these habits that we've been told by society to do, which some examples, I think you just started a couple better ones than me.
Yeah, I had a few examples of just dads in general. Like, they all follow very certain specific interests, like liking beer, doing the barbecue, watching sports together. And
golf.
Then, you know, like moms are always bringing salads to family gatherings or liking candles, or like, you know, there's very kind of like a split distinction within that. And it's like, is this an innate quality of fathers to like barbecuing, sports and beer? Or is it a way that they bond with other men and like perform this, you know, way of gender that is a way that can be bonded together through? And also trad wives, that's another example of how, you know, women are increasingly, I guess there's been a bit of a dip in it, but I'd say it's increasing again, of just like this hyper feminine gender roles. And we don't see all women doing that, but just the idea of being very soft and gentle and making all of your stuff from scratch, and all this domestic labor is being romanticized again.
Yeah, it's like go into your divine femininity. Which
I hate this phrase.
Don't like that phrase either. I'm scrolling through my Facebook reels, and sometimes when I see that divine femininity, I go instantly dislike this reel and block it. Because, yeah, it goes off this idea that, you know, the woman is submissive and she must say, yes, husband, just yes, husband.
No husband is illegal.
Yeah, and obviously, like, she is usually a virgin. Most of the times, only had very little relationships, no sexual promiscuity, that end. So kind of this whole realm, which goes into, that's the extreme minority of women, I feel like, who are playing into this sphere, alongside the manosphere.
Yes, because they're referring to themselves as high value women.
Oh.
Because they have this low body count, they have these traditionally feminine characteristics that complement, you know, a man's counter characteristics, and that those counter characteristics are like dominating and providers, and that's like all what the manosphere really stands for, are these also traditional masculine roles.
Exactly. And this also goes into why I feel like society and a lot of us not maybe everyone, but a big chunk of people who voice their opinions on women who speak up and voice their opinions, because there's things like, you know, girl boss and Karens who, you know, like, essentially what they're doing is speaking their mind, and they're not being, specifically with Karens, that I actually feel slightly bad because not that, like, I mean, there's very dramatized versions. There's a lot of bad women out there who are really mean. But sometimes, like, I feel like just the notion of a woman speaking and voicing their annoyance or frustration on someone, there is so much hatred for that woman. And there is no equivalent name for a man who does this, for example, which I think is an obvious example of this.
Yeah, there's so many different tropes to fit women into if they're doing one thing or another. Yeah, like expressing their opinions or just, I guess, challenging somebody. And those are completely discredited because you, you know, you just fit them into this trope. It's funny or it's pathetic or whatever, and you can just kind of push it aside. You don't really have to consider what they're saying as an equal, because yeah, maybe they're a Karen, maybe they're, you know, like, there is validity to, you know, some Karens kind of going way too far with it and even like being super racist. But for a lot of the parts, there are like a lot of ways to discredit women and what they care about.
Yeah. I think it's the equivalent of the performative male, to be honest.
Really?
The Karen is the equivalent.
I don't think so.
Not the equivalent. I mean, it's as
Karens are not performative,
stretch.
Are they?
I don't think the performative, but as in society dislikes both of them because they go against what is traditionally noticed and wanted in their original, you know, in their further gender performative performance.
Perhaps.
In a way.
Perhaps. I feel like society hates Karens more than performative males.
Yes. I mean, performative males is a much more new concept.
Yeah.
And also very much less, more harmless.
That's
concept,
true.
Too. But going off also some of these more gender performances. So, yeah, we talked about these performative males, which are more like in this, you know, young demographic, you know, more young people talk about this than older people. But also in this, you know, young Gen Z sphere, millennial, there's a lot of things like, as we said, the manosphere. There's also things like looks maxing, where a lot of men specifically just want to look as best as possible.
As manly as possible.
Manly as possible. Masculine as possible. Get surgery, everything, chiseled jaw, and hit the gym a lot.
Yeah, it's almost, yeah, like men are almost in a way slightly catching up to how much beauty standards have been put on women. And that just kind of seems like an example of how far capitalism has also starting to focus in on men's beauty standards more, which is interesting because women have been getting plastic surgery since like plastic surgery was kind of invented for women. So now we see men doing that, and it's interesting.
Yeah, just another way for them to make money. I guess they just saw this, you know, untapped pool of money, and they're like, let's also hit their self-esteem too.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got look maxing, we've got things like hypergamy.
What is that?
Yeah, I actually just recently heard this term, where it's pretty much the thought, it comes from this very, you know, red pill mindset from the manosphere, which refers, this popular term that refers to the Matrix, where you could take the blue pill or the red pill, and the blue pill, you can just live in bliss and ignorance, but then the red pill will show you reality. And so this is a term, hypergamy, that kind of comes from this sphere where it's like, all these women, all like the top 10% of men kind of thing. And it's saying that woman, you know, it's putting down woman by saying they only like men who are certain higher status than them. And
maybe it's because the bar is so extremely low for men. The top 10% are just like
normal.
Decent ones. Sorry.
Just
joking around.
Summer party. But yeah, this is, I think this whole sphere and this manosphere is all also a pushback against our evolving gender norms, because obviously we're at a point in time where we've evolved at least a lot more than the 20th century of how women can perform their gender. But there are a lot of people who want to remain back to where we were before.
Yeah, like a ton of control. And like, we think we're more liberated in terms of gender expression and gender freedom, but there is a lot of shame that is very pushed in society to keep us in our places, like especially with purity culture, for example, which really ties in to high value women and just how women should be acting in general. And I think that's still very prevalent and internalized in a lot of people. I know I've internalized it as well, just this idea of like your value as a woman being tied to, you know, whatever sexual activity you're participating in or not. And it's just interesting how society is still very not as liberated as we might think it is. Sometimes I think it is, and I'm like, wait, everyone can just be themselves. And actually, no, we can't. No. We're very constrained still.
Do you feel like you personally have anything internalized for like feminine traits?
Oh my gosh, definitely. I think there's just so much that's been taught to you as a woman to push down any kind of uncomfortable feelings that you have so that other people can feel comfortable.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Believe me, I know that one pretty well.
Yeah, I think every woman knows that.
You know, yeah, we all know.
Any kind of uncomfortability or pain or anything that might make another person feel uncomfortable or rejected or weird, like, it's always kind of taught to prioritize that person's well-being over your own.
Even if it will have bad outcomes in the very, very long term.
Mm-hmm. And it will. It definitely will.
For both people.
Yeah. It doesn't really foster genuine relationships.
No.
That kind of characteristic. And that's something I'm also trying to work on getting better at. But it's hard when it's so like deep rooted and ingrained. How about you, DJ Coco? Do you have any?
I was thinking more of the back to the speaking up thing. I think that's been a struggle for me, where I have been always kind of a quiet kid in general. I think personality wise, I'm just more on the quiet side. But it's also more like, am I just quiet because I don't want to speak up and I don't want to say anything that once again makes other people feel uncomfortable and goes back into this, you know, people pleasing? I don't even want to say people pleasing, because I feel like that's just a surface level term for what women have been doing.
Yeah,
I don't like that. That term very much. I feel like,
I guess it's a lot of sacrifice that women do, I think.
But yeah, that's one thing. Like, I'm very nervous to raise my hand in class. I'm very nervous, even just in conversations with friends, if someone says something that, you know, maybe it's slightly offensive, I'm not the one to be like, oh, don't say that, which I should now, like, I'm trying now to do that more and being more direct in that sense. But I've done that a lot through my life, where I'll just accept it and not voice what I want to say.
Yeah. And I feel like it's good to reflect on these kinds of, because in a way, like, it's internalized, but it's also, you're kind of performing how you're expected to act as well. So, like, when I was thinking about this idea of gender as a performance, I'm like, like, what do I do that is a performance for other people when I'm thinking about my own gender expression? And I think probably one of the biggest ones is just makeup. Like, I think most women could kind of relate to that, is wanting to fulfill this expectation of women to be pretty or beautiful, like something nice to look at. And you don't want your face to offend anyone. Like, you don't want people to be like, oh, that's kind of ugly, even though it should be, you know, fine to be ugly. Also, just stuff like nail polish, wanting my hair, like, I just really don't want to look that masculine, because I kind of associate it with being like ugly as a woman. Like, if it's like, oh, you look like a masculine woman, that's kind of not attractive to men in a way.
Yeah. I feel that too. But you did chop your hair, though.
I did
do the hair chop.
I shaved my head, and that was like, it's more of like an exposure therapy for a lot of stuff. But I still like have this little male gaze in my head somewhere, where like, I do think about how I might look even when I'm just alone in my room, and how my body looks or my face looks. And I really, that makes me uncomfortable, and I wish it would go away.
Yeah. I think, I guess, I mean, I sound so old when I say this. We're just so young still, so I feel like obviously, like, I've seen statistics where women in their 40s and 50s and 60s, they don't give a crap anymore. Yeah. They don't give any craps. They're like, whatever. But it's so hard at this age when everyone is looking for social validation. Everyone is looking to partner up with someone to not think about these things. So it is something that will come with age, but we'll just have to figure out and just maintain as much, because it will never go away, I think personally.
Yeah, maybe.
But I definitely agree too, because I personally feel like I dress very androgynous. Well, more when I was younger, that I didn't really appeal to the male gaze, but I always kept my hair long, and I also always wore makeup, which kind of counteracts that whole idea, because I'm still catering towards trying to look more feminine regardless of how my outfit looks. So even some part of me still always does that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do have a question that I was just thinking of about this topic. It's like, maybe it's a bit personal, but do you feel like a woman, or like, is there anything that makes you feel like, I am a woman?
I feel like a woman, but at a certain point in my life, I actually considered feeling non-binary, mm-hmm. is what I would say. But that is a tricky situation where I don't want to diss people who are non-binary, but I think I was influenced by social media. Mm. And I don't want to say that, because I know a lot of people do feel like it, and actually feel to be non-binary and et cetera. But my personal experience was like that. And I think I just feel more like a woman,
mm-hmm.
And know that, I guess, I know that I'm, what's the word? I guess, know that I'm a woman. But not that it's good or bad, but that's just how I feel. But turning the question back.
Yeah.
where
I had a feeling
you?
I'd get the question turned back on me.
I
want to
hear this.
I mean, I think I just want to respond quickly that it is, like, it's interesting that you got influenced by social media in some way, but I also don't think, I think that's kind of, I know you cleared it up, but I think it is sometimes seen as like, oh, a negative thing to be influenced. But I think it is positive that people can be exposed to like different ways of gender expression and then kind of like experiment with their own and see if that fits for them or if it feels right or not. Because if that didn't exist, you know, you might never know or have questioned it before. And like, it's always, in my opinion, it's always really good to question things about yourself so you can actually find out who you really are instead of just kind of going with the flow and the grain. But anyways, for me, I wouldn't say I necessarily deeply feel like identified with the idea of being a woman. Like, I'm not like that makes me feel like so great to be a woman. But I guess thinking about being any other gender, I don't also feel that identified with it. So I'm just like, okay, yeah, like, why? Like, why change it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like it's hard. I feel more just like a human being or something.
Same.
Like, when I think about myself, I'm not like, oh, I'm a woman. Like, I'm just a person.
I'm like, I feel like I'm everyone. I don't know how to explain it, but
everything
and everyone I am just embodying. Like, I'm just like one of those blobs that will eventually die kind of thing. Like, like, I'm built like we're in this woman body, but we'll just die. And we'll be known as a human kind of thing. That's how I see it. I feel like maybe like that idea.
Because especially if you just are like in your brain constantly, it's not like you're, in my opinion, it's not like your thoughts are like super gendered all the time. Like, it's just like, oh, this is me. But yeah, part of that is that I am a woman, but that doesn't make up my identity.
Yeah, because your thoughts, like everyone's thoughts, all at least one man and one woman and other genders have also thought about that same thought. Like, it's not just like woman thinking about
thoughts
this
are universal.
Yeah, thoughts are universal. So it feels weird to think that thoughts can be gendered in a way.
I guess it's more just like how I feel in my own body, and I do feel comfortable in my body. So I guess that kind of makes me a woman, but it's not like, oh, I love that I look like a woman or anything. Like, it's just like, oh, I feel comfortable in this. I feel like maybe I'd feel comfortable as a man too. I don't know. We'll see. That's just a theory. I don't know. I'm not going to like try it out just for the sake of it, but
you'd be like, my name is DJ Comet. What's the,
I mean, Star is also kind of gender neutral.
Okay, you'll just be DJ Star again.
Anyway.
Anyways.
It's just a question to think about for the listener, too, is, like, is there anything that makes you feel your gender? Like, gender euphoria, I know, is, like, a term where it feels like, ah, this is me, this is great, I feel, like, so manly or so womanly or just, like, so non-binary.
Going off this question, though, I do feel like what makes me feel like a woman, which I still cannot understand myself, is how much that I like very feminine hobbies and that I don't like masculine hobbies whatsoever. This is me just, I'm a health science major, which is one of the highest like, female-dominated majors in university, and all the universities, first of all. So I'm like, why did I choose that, first of all? Second, like, I like cooking. I like doing art. I like sewing and mending. Like, these are
very... Oh, you like sewing and mending?
I try to sew and mend, but I'm like, yeah. You know, like, it's more interesting. These are not male-dominated hobbies whatsoever, but why do I feel this innate urge to do them, which is so strange to me, because I'm like, who socialized me? Or is this biological?
Or is it just a personal thing,
is
too?
Is it personal?
Because actually, going off of that, like... sometimes doing things that are traditionally more masculine make me feel more like a woman. I don't know if that sounds like really counterintuitive, but sometimes when I'm like trying to fix my car and like I kind of like grease on me and I'm like working hard, I'm like, I kind of feel like more of a woman right now. But then at the same time,
I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just how I feel. At the same time, sometimes when I am like helping someone emotionally and trying to use my emotional intelligence to, you know, like help someone get through something, I also feel like I'm more, it's not like I'm like super womanly, but I also do enjoy doing that. And like, I feel like I'm good at that.
Maybe it's this idea like femininity, not thinking about the traditional traits, but like with as in strength.
Yeah.
Or as in, you know, authority in a way.
I guess just like some sort of power.
Power.
Yeah.
Something like that. But yeah, obviously there's no answer to this.
Yeah, there's not any one way to be a woman either, obviously, no. Or a man, or like any gender. Anyway, just some food for thought, I guess.
Yeah. So that kind of, I'm going to skip over to the counter argument, though.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
Because this kind of ties into what we were just saying. And for my part of that, I just feel have this innate urge to do these hobbies like mending and cooking and, you know, art, which are not are very, you know, lots of women do them, and a lot of women all feel the same like me, and there's such a small percentage of guys who do this, whereas once again I bring up this chimpanzee and bonobos, which
bonobo time,
if you've listened to the show for a while, that's all I like talking about
is... Our show should be called Bonobo Party.
Honestly, future name bonobo.
Yeah.
Okay. And they share both of them equally, 98.7% of their DNA with humans, so they're our closest ancestors. And so there's a lot of primatologists and scientists who study these guys to get a more deeper understanding of, you know, how humans socialize and what parts of us are biological, et cetera. Obviously, it can't be a perfect picture because, you know, even though we share so much of our DNA, that little difference of DNA, we don't look like bonobos or chimpanzees. And it is just taking this with a grain of salt as well, which I'm trying to do, because they've done a lot of research where they're trying to find human behaviors in chimpanzees and bonobos that they try to extrapolate to humans, which is kind of hard because, I mean, we're still not the same species, and human behaviors are pretty different from any animal's behaviors. But then again, that could be a very androcentrism look, because that's the part where I'm like, you know, we are still animals. Aren't we just thinking we're above animals when we're animals? So that's where my kind of thinking was from, this androcentrism that we should look at chimpanzees and bonobos, which is our closest relative, very close relative.
Can I just say something really quick?
Yeah.
About the androcentrism is like, yes, I see what you're saying, but I just want to also preface it as we are still the ones conducting the research on chimpanzees and bonobos. So we are not only observing, but also making interpretations that are inherently biased towards the human experience. So I just want to say that too, which is in a sense, it's kind of androcentric. It's like studying other species and be like, well, this is similar to us.
Also rephrase anthropocentrism.
Oh, anthropocentrism is like the centering men is the...
I was saying that and I was like, something is wrong here.
Okay, I'm glad we cleared that up. Anthropocentrism is placing a masculine point of view at the center.
But anthropocentrism is the worldview that humans are the most important beings. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're deriving this from. Okay. Going back into the point, which we'll discuss, one of them was that there's recent research in the 21st century that young female chimpanzees were more likely to carry sticks and logs and objects as they were babies. So there was this 14-year study that was done in this national park in Uganda by the Harvard Gazelle, and there was 100-plus accounts of young female chimpanzees carrying sticks that they would bring them to the nest to sleep with them, and also they noticed them building separate nests to just put the stick in, and they noticed that this stick kind of behavior never rarely carried into the like adult female behaviors. So that was one point. And so, you know, relating this back to humans, it's interesting how we gender our toys, and we see girls playing with dolls, for example, and boys playing with fire trucks, and we're thinking, you know, what if we just switched the toys? But then when we're looking at chimpanzees, they have, you know, nothing to, for the female chimpanzees, they have no influencing factors for carrying the stick. So,
are you sure about that?
Well, what do you think?
I don't know. I think potentially, yeah, I'm not trying to argue super hard for one stance or another, because it is also just speculation. Like, there's like, we're theorizing right now.
But what if, because there's no adult females that are doing the stick play, they're just naturally doing it.
But aren't adult females like taking care of their babies?
So they're just monitoring their behavior.
So they're like modeling this like caretaking behavior. Like,
but why only the females? Why wouldn't the boys do this too?
Hmm.
That's the thing. Why aren't the male chimpanzees doing that stick thing?
Yeah, maybe they're like, okay, if so, like if there is this, you know, like inherent maternal instinct, which I don't think is, you know, wrong or anything. Like, it would make sense that there is some biological drive for women to be more maternal, especially during breastfeeding and like needing to have the child close by and like caretake the child. But I'm just like, how generalizable is that to other aspects of gender? You know what I mean? Like, okay, so we are saying that this is like biological to have this maternal behavior, but like, how far can we extend that argument as into like, oh, are women like natural born caretakers? Like, is this social role there? Like, it's biological determinism, right? So it just makes me think, like, can we generalize it to anything else? Or should we just take it as like, okay, maybe they have like female bonobos have a propensity to be more caretaking, and maybe adult women do, or like children, little girls do as well. But like, what does that mean for like the performance of gender?
I think that's where obviously there has been jabs at the biological determinants of femininity, because it can't fully explain, you know, every behavior. Obviously chimpanzees and bonobos don't have the amount of, you know, advertisements and family structures and even language to be telling what their offspring should be do, or like what their kids should be doing, kind of thing. And so we live in a much different environment than just, you know, these more, not I don't want to say primitive animals, but they live in a more simple lifestyle. Not saying that humans are better, once again, because I don't like saying that point in general. But it is difficult. But I guess I think there is some I personally believe there is some belief, there is some aspect to this that I think that is questionable, and that there is some sort of biological determinism. Not the largest, but there's something there.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, I have some just floating around points. Is that, okay, so the thing is, yes, perhaps we are seeing this in animals. Like, we can look at animal behavior and interpret it one way or another. But aren't there also ways that humans are, like, this is a question, but, like, are there not also ways where humans are kind of above biology in a way? In which we can value, like, we have structures and sets of morals and values that will follow over perhaps like a biological instinct that other animals would have. Like, we don't murder other people, like, we shouldn't, at least. Like, I know there's faults and flaws, it's not a perfect system by any means, but we still are able to abstractly think about these kinds of consequences and actions. And like, I don't think we are only driven by instinct. Like, we also have consequences and thoughts about other people and how it affects other, like, it's very, it's like, in my opinion, I can't look into an animal's brain, but we have like a lot of different belief systems as well, like about gender, for example. Like, if you think about cross-culturally, there are a lot of variations and what's the word, yeah, just diversity in gender expression that makes it really hard to like limit it down and think about what is actually the innate gender quality here, because then you're kind of discrediting some other culture's ideas of gender by being like, actually this view is what determinism, like, is what determines gender. That's one of my points I want to bring up, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I see that other cultures can see differently. I think because I think my root belief is influencing my thoughts on the topic.
Oh yeah, just like mine too. Because I believe like gender is pretty much like a performance more so than a biological innate thing.
Because I think it's split, but I think because I don't think humans are above evolution is why I'm kind of stemming this off. Because I think that although we've evolved to a certain point that is obviously surpassed all other animals, that we will be equally wiped out at one point by evolution. And so that's why I'm kind of thinking that we are constrained by biology. And we've gotten to this point of life where, you know, we're at this very short time point of Homo sapiens being, you know, dominating Earth, but we can equally get wiped out by a virus and such. And that is just kind of where the root of my argument comes from, is that I feel like we are more similar to animals than or that I feel like other people think. But I also don't discredit the whole socialization part, because there is no way, like, I don't see every single woman and every single man doing these specific behaviors. Like, not every single woman wants to cradle a doll. Like, there's obviously girls, like, who grew up and they didn't play with dolls, lots of them. And so that's what makes humans different as well.
Yeah, and also just the existence of non-binary people or just, like, gender-fluid people across the globe and, like, consistently in a lot of different cultures is, like,
there's also animals that are non-binary.
Yes, I also wanted to talk about fish in this episode. Yes, because I saw, like, a while ago, I was watching this, like, Nat Geo kind of documentary on this fish that would just constantly change genders. And actually, 500 species of fish display some signs of, it's called, like, hermaphroditism, which just means that they can switch from male to female or vice versa. And this is also really interesting because every, like, animal who's a mammal or, like, on land at this point has evolved from fish. So right. I think it's, like, a reproductive strategy in a way to, like, maximize your success. But it's just so interesting that, like, gender is not binary or rigid in the animal. In a lot of, like, I don't think it's just fish, but in this specific example, like, 500 species of fish.
How did they, like, what did the video show?
That's the video was just following one specific fish, and they're like, okay, now this fish is, like, going into the cave, and then, like, it came out with, like, It was just like fully different.
It's got like a chest now.
Yeah. Got some pecs. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that example up, is that like, yeah, we can relate to chimpanzees, bonobos, but they also have extremely different, not extremely, but like different social structures too. Like matriarchal, one's patriarchal.
I think at least they're closer in relation to fish.
They're closer, but also we evolved from fish. So it's kind of like, you
know. I'll give you half a brownie point for that.
Thank you.
Good point, though. I did not see this fish thing coming.
Yeah, I just
not heard
put
that.
It at the bottom of our dock.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, the whole socialization versus biological explanation, reasoning, questioning about gender itself, because once again, not solved. There's no one strict answer of gender, and at least I'm personally glad that we have more fluid gender and more, especially more gender expression, because I would not like to have lived in the 20th century and show up wearing what I was wearing, what I've been wearing for the past couple years of my life.
You'd be burned at the stake.
Oh, be burned. Completely
Which,
burned.
But we do need to wrap up the show. We're actually getting pretty close to the end. Just fun to talk about.
Yeah, we got pretty caught up. I thought that was going to be a short one, but
yeah, me too. So next up will be Lynn's open mic and then Bitcoover at 8 p.m. with our music director, Connor. And yeah, that's it for the show. We're running out of time, but I hope you all enjoyed that conversation and the music.
Any final wrap-up questions? I guess take a look into yourself, you know.
Reflect.
Reflect. As DJ Star said before, you know, do you feel like a man? Do you feel like a woman?
What do you feel like?
What do you feel like? What do you express
Who are
yourself?
You?
And also the people around you too, like how do they express themselves, and have they said anything about feeling weird about it? But that's all there is you can do. So we are gonna head off now. So.
See you next time.
See you.
Thanks for listening. See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
CJSF